Rose.
Good morning. It's once again our extreme pleasure to welcome Shohaku Okumura Roshi to Berkeley Zen Center. Okumura Roshi's work is well known to all of us, I think, through his translation of his teacher Uchiyama Roshi's Opening the Hand of Thought and the commentary on the Tenzo Kyokin, which is a favorite of Sojin's to teach from, and the Bendo Wa. He's also a well-known translator of Dogen. In fact, it was his teacher's curse and encouragement to learn English and to come to the United States and teach Dogen, which he's been doing for the past almost decade in week-long lectures called Genzoes. He just finished one of those at San Francisco Zen Center and has been his offering to us at the end of those teachings the last several years now. He's here to offer a day of teaching on his favorite called Ryokan. Welcome, Okumura Roshi.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. As I say every year, I'm really happy to be here to share Ryokan's poems. Okay. Hello. Hello. Good morning. Does it work? Good. Okay. As I say every year, I'm really happy to be here in this Zendo. Can you hear? Good. After 1 week of Genzoe, during which I give 2 90-minute lectures in English. Today I'm going to talk on Ryokan's poem from this book, Great Fool. I think this is the best English book on Ryokan, and there's many translations of many of his poems. And in this book, the authors sorted his Chinese poems into several sections, and each year I talk about a few poems in certain section. And this year I'd like to talk on the section entitled Butterfly Dream. Probably you are familiar with this expression, Butterfly Dream, that came from the Chinese classic Chuan Tzu is one of the very important Chinese Taoist philosopher. He lived about a few hundred years before CE, and Buddhism arrived from India to China around the first CE, Common Era. So Chuan Tzu was much earlier than, you know, Buddhism was introduced to China. And yet later, when Buddhism was introduced to China, Chinese people, in the beginning, Chinese Buddhists interpret Buddhist teachings in terms of a Taoist idea. So in the beginning, Taoism and Buddhism are somehow mixed together. So in order to study Chinese Buddhism, especially, you know, Zen Buddhism, to have some understanding about Taoist teaching is kind of important. And also Ryokan was a Japanese Soto Zen monk who lived in the second half of 18th century to the beginning of the 19th century, so about 200 years ago. And he loved Chuan Tzu. It said Ryokan was trained as a Soto Zen monk at a monastery named Entsuji in Okayama, presently Okayama Prefecture, until he received Dharma transmission from his teacher. And about 10 or more years later, he went back to his hometown in Echigo. But we don't know where he was and what he did during that more than 10 years. Probably he was traveling around the different places in the country. But there was one kind of a essay written by a certain scholar whose name was Kondo Banjo. He was a scholar of Confucianism. He wrote about his memory about a monk he met 20 or 30 years ago, before he wrote that essay. He met in the mountains in Shikoku. Shikoku is one of the four main islands in Japan. And this person was traveling, so he was still young. And when he was walking in the mountains, he had a heavy rain. So he tried to find a shelter. And fortunately, he found a very small hermitage. And he asked the person who was living in that hermitage to, you know, give him a shelter. And the person that was a monk allowed him to stay. And the person, the scholar, wrote, this monk didn't say anything. He was a very quiet person, and just he nodded and accepted him to stay with him. And probably that was during the rainy season. We have about 1 month, or more than 1 month, maybe 1.5 months rainy season in June and early July. Probably that was during the rainy season. The rain continued for 3 days. So the person the scholar stayed with that monk for 3 days. And the first day he didn't say, that monk didn't say anything. So he was curious about who is this monk. And he, in that small hut, he had nothing. But two books. And those two books are Chuan Tzu. And he found this monk's calligraphy, and the calligraphy was really beautiful. So he was impressed by the monk's calligraphy, and he remembered the name of the monk in the calligraphy. And it said Ryokan from Echigo. So many years later, he remembered that monk, that strange monk in Shikoku was Ryokan. And if that is true, then for I don't know how long, but while he stayed in that hermitage, the only book he read was Chuan Tzu. And I also, when I was young, I also very much liked Chuan Tzu. Before I became Dogen's student, I thought I was a student of Chuan Tzu. He's really, I don't like so much, you know, I don't like Lao Tzu so much. I like Chuan Tzu better. Lao Tzu is very quiet. And no laughing. But in Chuan Tzu there are so many interesting stories and a lot of humor. And this expression, butterfly dream, is one of the interesting, not a story, but a metaphor about Chuan Tzu's understanding of life. I found English translation of that section of Chuan Tzu by Barton Watson, and since it's very short, so let me read where this expression butterfly dream came. It said, once Chuan Chu was his personal name. Chuan was his family name. So Chuan Chu dreamed he was a butterfly. So he had a dream, and within that his dream, he was a butterfly. And a butterfly flitting and fluttering, flying around, happy with himself, and doing as he pleased. So he was, within his dream, he was a butterfly, and he, enjoyed, flying around. And he didn't know, in the dream, he didn't know he was Chuan Chu. So he was completely a butterfly. But suddenly he woke up, and there he was, a solid and unmistakable Chuan Chu. So suddenly he woke up from the dream. Then he found he was not a butterfly, but a Chuan Chu. But he didn't know. He didn't know if he was Chuan Chu, who had dreamed he was a butterfly, or a butterfly dreaming he was Chuan Chu. This is a really interesting story. So he was a butterfly in his dream. But when he woke up, he found he was not a butterfly, but he was Chuan Chu. But he started to think, is this a Chuan Chu who was dreaming as a butterfly, or is this butterfly? Am I in the dream of the butterfly? So the dream and reality, penetrating each other, and he didn't know which is real reality. That is the meaning of this expression, butterfly dream. And it's a few more sentences. Between Chuan Chu and a butterfly, there must be some distinction between, dream and reality. There must be some distinction. There must be some difference. This is called the transformation of things. So Chuan Chu called this, transformation of things. This is the story where this expression, butterfly dream, come from. And Ryokan really likes this, analogy about our life. And shortly after I started to practice Zazen, I sat 5-day session at Antaiji in Kyoto. I think I was 20 years old. I was very young. When we are young, time pass doesn't fly. Especially during Zazen. Especially 5-day session. during 5-day session, we sat, 50 was 50 minutes, and we sat 14 periods a day for 5 days. That was our session. And I think in maybe third or fourth day, I felt like I was sitting in this posture forever, from the beginningless beginning. And I felt like at that time my name was not Shohak. My Shohak is my Dharma name given when I was ordained, but anyway, I call me Shohaku. I felt like, the 20 years of life after my birth was like a dream. And I found this is really interesting, and probably that experience made me to continue to sit. I wonder, what is this? And I tried to study, you know, what Zazen is. So it was really, to me, important experience. Which is dream? You know, usually we think the experience in our sitting is like a dream. And to be Shohaku is actual, real person. But in my Zazen, I felt opposite. I finally thought, you know, I was finally wake up from the dream of Shohaku. And which is reality and which is dream? That is the introduction of my talk today. So I'd like to talk about a dream in Buddhism. And this word dream is used in two different ways or usage. Or those two are almost opposite. Of course, when Buddha, attained so-called enlightenment under the Bodhi tree, he said he attained Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. And Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi in English is something like unsurpassable, complete, perfect awakening. So Bodhi means awakening. Awakening means before that he was sleeping or in dream. And of course dream is in this case dream is a delusion, and when we awake we first see the true reality of all beings as it is, but before that we cannot see or we don't see the reality of all beings. We are within our dream, and within our dream we create the picture of the world within our mind using our words and concept. You know, the picture of the world produced in our mind is a dream. And when body or awakening in terms of enlightenment is awakening from that dream, we found what we think, what we see, or the picture of the world produced in our mind is not real reality. So when Buddha awakened to the reality, he found that is a dream, you know, production of our mind. So all concepts and perception, concept, and definition, and the picture of the world we produce using those things is a dream. And when we awake to the reality of emptiness, there's no such things really. That is one usage of this word dream. So we need to wake up from this dream. That is one of the usage of, you know, this word, dream, in Buddhism. But there is another one, and it's kind of very interesting to me. That is, when we wake up to the reality of emptiness, that means nothing, all beings have no fixed self-nature. So that is the meaning of emptiness. So everything is impermanent and therefore always changing. So there is no fixed identity, in this case called Shohaku. Shohaku is just a name of this movement which is always changing. You know, when I was 20, I was much stronger. But I didn't really understand what Buddhism means, what the meaning of this practice, but somehow I really wanted to practice. So I, you know, devoted my entire life to this practice without any understanding. But now I believe I have some understanding, but my body is not so strong, so I couldn't sit so much. Now I cannot see so much when I was 20. So, anyway, fitted through Shohaku. I don't know. And that was Shohaku almost 40 years ago. And 40 years later, this is Shohaku, which is real Shohaku, or true Shohaku. So, there's no such, you know, thing called true Shohaku. 40 years ago, I was 20 years, you know, student. And now I'm 60 years so-called Buddhist priest. Which is a real thing? We don't know. So there's no such fixed reality. So this reality of impermanence and changing without any fixed identity is like a dream. So when we wake up, we find reality is like a dream. So when within a dream, we think reality is something fixed, something, you know, solid, like what is said in Chuang Tzu's, you know, story. You know, when he woke up from the dream of butterfly, he found this is a solid Chuang Tzu. But when we wake up, we found there's no such solid, you know, Shohaku. That is another meaning of a dream. And for example, in the very end of the Diamond Sutra, there is a verse, very famous verse. Where is it? I forget it, but I talked during the Genzoe, that is said, our life, not our life, but all conditioned beings are like a dream, like a phantom, and also like bubbles or shadow or a flash of lightning or a dewdrop. So we should see, you know, all the conditioned beings like a dream. So this is, when we awake to the reality of all beings, we see everything is like a dream. But when we are dreaming, we see everything is solid. Now this almost opposite meaning of dream are actually penetrating each other. That is the way not only Ryokan, but, you know, the masters used this word dream, which can mean both delusion, in which we see everything is really existing. Shohaku is really here. And yet, when we awake to that the reality from that dream of Shohaku is really here, I see Shohaku is like a dream. You know, these are very, to me, really interesting. And this is very important point in understanding Zen teaching. You know, for example, Dogen Zenji also wrote a chapter of Shodo Genzo entitled Muchu Setsumu. That means relating dream within a dream. This expression, talking about dream, speaking about dream within that dream, it came also from Chuang Tzu. So our life is like talking about dream within the dream. And I'd like to introduce one poem by Ryokan about this kind of a, what is it called, interpenetration of two different kind of dream. In this poem, Ryokan also quote from Chuang Tzu. So to me, this idea is all kind of related each other. His poem, if you have this book, Great Fool, It appears page 184, if you want to check. The poem is as follows. Who was it said? Who was it said? Names are the guest of reality. Names are the guest of the reality. This guest of the reality means name is not reality itself. Reality is like a, itself is like a host. But name is a guest. That means it's coming and going. That means, you know, this is a pair of reading glass. That is the name of this thing. But this is a pair of reading glass only when I use this as a reading glass. When, you know, this is broken, you know, I buy a cheap reading glass. So it's often broken. And sometimes I sleep on this. When, you know, if one part is broken, this is, I cannot use this as a reading glass anymore. Then I change the name of this as a junk or garbage. So the name is just like a guest, you know. When during the time I can use this as a reading glass, as a device to read something, I call this a reading glass. But when that period is over, then this has will have different name. So name is like a guest, even though this doesn't really change or same, but we change the name depending upon the relationship between this person and this thing. So name is like a traveler or a guest coming and going. This is what Chuang Tzu said. So Ryokan is asking about this saying by Chuang Tzu. Name is not real thing, but real thing is something else. Or this is real thing, but the living glass is not real thing. So concept or definition is not a real thing, but real thing is this thing and this thing. So shouhaku doesn't mean. The word show means true, and hak means broad. That is my dharma name, but I'm not so true, not always true, true or right, and I'm not so broad, but somehow my name is true and broad. Often, something true is narrow, but my name is kind of contradicted. But that, you know, contradicted name, Sho and Haku, is simply my name, not me. So, reality of this, you know, thing, this person, and this word, or concepts, true and broad, has no connection. So, Sho Haku is just a name of this person. After this person became a Buddhist monk, before that I had different name, and you know, after 7 days after my birth, I didn't have no name because my parents didn't decide my name. After within 1 week, they had to register my name to their town office. So first 7 days of my life, I had really no name, and that is the real name, I think. True name is no name. I think that is what Lao Tzu said. Anyway, so this is within Taoist philosophy, this is really true, and we think we agree with it. The name is not the reality itself, or concept, or words, or whatever material we use to think is not real thing. Real thing is beyond thinking. That is what even Dogen taught. But Ryokan questioned about this thing. And he said, these words, have come down to us from ancient times. So, from Chuang Tzu, so more than, 2,000 years ago. And it has been transmitted. That means at least some people agreed with this idea. So, but he, Dogen is like Dogen, always questioning. But, or however, but even if people know that names aren't real, but even if people know that names aren't real, they don't see that reality itself has no root. You know, we understand, you know, name or concept is not real thing, but we don't see that reality is also has no root. So this is a question, Ryokan's question from the Buddhist teaching of emptiness. Even the real thing has no fixed identity. So not only the name or concept, but also actual thing is also no the things that we usually call reality has also no fixed identity as a real thing, because that is part of the meaning of, you know, impermanence and anatoman, or egolessness, or no substance. So we should awaken to that reality also. That is Ryokan's point of question. So they don't see that reality itself has no root. Name and reality both are beside the point. I don't really agree with this translation. Both are beside the point. I think what Ryokan is saying, those two are not really connected to each other. Name is name, and that is empty. And reality is reality, and yet reality is also empty. It's really like a dream. And finally, Ryokan said, from this understanding, not only name and concept, but also real thing is like a dream. From this understanding, Ryokan says, just naturally find joy in the ever-changing flow. Just naturally find joy in the ever-changing flow. Ever-changing flow is, you know, the things are always coming and going, and situation and condition of our body and mind are also always changing. And we mean those, you know, six sense organs encounter with object of six sense organs. And this is one of the point we studied during Rath Genzoe. You know, Shakyamuni Buddha said, when our six sense organs of us and the object of six sense organs, there is a burning fire, and we make our life suffering. So our practice, or Buddhist practice, is extinguish the fire made by three poisonous mind, then cool down, then continue to live. That means when we wake up from the dream that there is some fixed thing, and we cling to something we like or something that give us a pleasant sensation, then I want to grasp this and make this thing to as my possession, and yet often we cannot, you know, possess it, so I start to run after those things to get it. Or often we encounter some things which gives us an unpleasant sensation. We want to be stay awake, and yet they come somehow. So we become angry, or we want to escape from that thing, or we have hatred, and our life become running after something or escaping from something. And Buddha called that is the fire caused by three poisonous mind. And by seeing, you know, those things, instead of being deceived by those objects as real thing, we need to wake up from the dream that those things are really there, and this thing, this five skandhas is really here, and I can possess something, or I want, or I should, you know, get something, that thing. That is a dream. And that dream caused the fire of three poisonous mind. So wake up from that dream. Allow us to live in more, you know, peaceful, stable way of life. That is what we do when we sit. We don't chase after anything, and we don't escape from anything. We just settle down right now, right here, and see things, everything is like a dream. And when we wake up from that dream, we start to see everything is like a dream. To me, that is very interesting. And that is our practice. So, this understanding of two meanings of dream is really has a deep meaning, very useful to understand what Buddha taught or what Dogen taught to us, and what is the meaning of that understanding within our practice today, within our right now, right here. How can we wake up from that dream in which we grasp and cling to things? So open our hand is the way we wake up from that dream. And when we wake up, we start to see all those things are like dream. It's kind of a paradox. But to see this paradox is really important and interesting. That makes our life more kind of a joyful, I mean enjoyable, to see things from both sides. And in the case of Dogen Zen's teaching, this is what he said when he says something like, we should see forms, all forms and no form. Do you understand? You know, these are all forms, but those forms are like a dream. So we have to see no form or formless reality. But those are both a dream, both dreams. Even the, you know, there's no form is a dream. If we think, you know, this no form is reality, and we try to escape from our idea of forms and try to get this idea of no form, then no form becomes a form. And we get into another dream. So when we really wake up, we need to wake up from both sides. Then our life becomes very interesting. You know, we cannot grasp anything, but we cannot ignore anything, even the dream. Even, you know, dream is not reality, or concept is not real thing, but there is some reason or cause and cause that we have ability to create concept, and we have ability to create something unreal, you know, like even the writing poems has something to do with to create something unreal, like a dream. And if we completely or simply negate the this ability to think of something unreal, then human life is not so interesting. movies or novels or poems or paintings or even the, visions or vision in our spiritual life or spiritual practice are all about our ability to see something it's not in front of us. It's our ability to think something, to create something unreal. And yet those have very important meaning in our life. So, in order to enjoy, dream, we have to see dream is reality, or reality is like dream. And we don't be deceived by the dream, but we see dream as dream. Then we can enjoy the dream without being, without making a fire of three poisonous mind. I think that is what I want to say this morning. And this afternoon I'm going to talk on several poems by Ryokan about the dream.
Could you read the poem through just through one more time?
Okay. Who was it said, names are the guest of reality. These words have come down to us from ancient times. But even if people know that names aren't real, they don't see that reality itself has no root. Name, reality, both are beside the point. Just naturally find joy in the ever-changing flow. Okay? It's funny. Any question? Please.
I want to ask you two questions if I can. The first one is, are there five skandhas or 25 skandhas or 250,000 skandhas? That's the first question. Or no skandhas?
Which one do you like?
I'm free to have as many skandhas as I like? Is that what you said?
No, which number do you like?
Oh, I like no skandhas.
That's good. Me too. It's your choice.
Could I ask the second question?
Sure, please.
Eiken Roshi, in one of the books that he wrote, described some teaching of samurai in medieval Japan, which said that the sword you raise is a dream or empty, and the body of your enemy is empty, so just swing through the body and do not be disturbed. So I was wondering, I was imagining taking a sword to the body of Shohaku and cutting through it, and then there's red blood on the floor of our zendo. Is there any problem about that?
I'm not sure. I think Eiken Roshi discussed about that teaching. That was Takuan, I think. Takuan Soho. Who said that thing. And Eiken Roshi discussed about that story and that theory or idea in his book, Mind of Clover,
yes.
Right? About the precept.
Yes.
Good and bad. So from that point of view, there's no good and bad. That is what, the teaching of Takuan meant. So Eiken Roshi kind of criticized about that position, so-called absolute position, which negate the morality or ethics or good and bad. When I talk about a precept we receive, I always start from the famous verse from Dhammapada that says, do everything good. No, don't do anything evil. Do everything good and keep your mind pure. And this is the teaching of all Buddhas. I think this is really the very basis of precept or ethics in Buddhism. So we should not do anything evil, and we should do everything good. And the third line, keep our mind pure, is going beyond good and bad. If we cling to good with and think, I am a good person because I did such and such good things, then that is a problem. Or if I think, you know, that person did such and such bad things, so that person is that person. This discrimination and clinging to good and bad is a problem. So this, the third line, being, keep your, what is this? Keep your mind pure means we should be free from discrimination between good and bad. So there is a two set of teachings. And often it is said, you know, to see, to go beyond good and bad is enlightenment. Or to see absoluteness beyond discrimination. But I don't agree with that understanding. And I think in that book, Etokimoshi said, you know, to see emptiness is to see absoluteness. So that is enlightenment. So from absolute position, I think Etokimoshi said, from that absolute position, what Takuan said is right. But I don't agree with that point with Etokimoshi. The absolute position is not seeing emptiness or beyond good and bad. But, for example, in the Heart Sutra, it said form is empty, and emptiness is form. And form in often it's understood as form is relative or discriminative, and emptiness is absolute or beyond discrimination. And I don't agree with this understanding. Because the Heart Sutra said is form is emptiness and emptiness is form. This should be not separated into two parts. But form is emptiness, emptiness is form is should be understood as one word. We cannot say this part is relative and that part is absolute. Because if we understand in that way, you know, this relative and absolute are relative. That is another point we discussed or studied during this Genzoe. True absolute or absolute should include relativity. So emptiness and form should be always together. This is another meaning of this, you know, true meaning of dream. Does it make sense?
Etokimoshi agrees with what you just said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, that's good. Please?
Thank you for your talk.
Mm-hmm.
I read something about Hakamaya Noriaki.
Pardon me?
Do you know Hakamaya Noriaki?
Oh, the Japanese Buddhist scholar?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He has these two etymologies of the word nirvana, and he says one of them is to uncover, and one of them is to extinguish.
Extinguish. Mm-hmm.
And you use the word extinguish in your talk to talk about
extinguish the fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Extinguishing the fire.
Mm-hmm.
What about the history of the word nirvana or the origin of it? Do you think it's discover or extinguish, or which one I like?
Because I'm not a scholar, so I really don't know the history or etymology of the word. But to me, nirvana is not, this word extinguishment sometimes is, you know, no existence. disappear completely. But, you know, even the fire of three poisonous mind is extinguished, we are still alive. Even Buddha attained, you know, Anuttara Samyaksambodhi, he lived, you know, another almost 50 years. That he, and during that 50 years, he was in Nirvana. So it's, even if the word means, Nirvana means extinguishment, it doesn't mean to stop being. How can we live without the fire of three poisonous mind? That is Nirvana, I think. So I don't really know about the original, really original meaning of this word. Okay. Please.
The last line, I can't repeat it now.
Mm-hmm.
It just, it's a tragedy. It's not my understanding of
sadness. Really?
Never heard anything.
To find
the
joy?
Yes. Let the butterfly dream and joy the flow. Well,
now I'm enjoying this encountering. I'm sharing my understanding, and it looks like you are enjoying what I'm talking. This is, you know, find the joy instead of, you know, have an argument, conflict, and fighting.
I've certainly seen a lot of joy in normal play. I mean,
yeah.
I see that. But
that is what it means. We can enjoy impermanence.
So
we need to make effort to make change the world in the way we can enjoy. That is a bodhisattva vow, I think. So now it's really difficult to enjoy, you know, this world. So we have to work with it. That is, I think, bodhisattva vow. And to do so, you know, anger doesn't work. Anger against that kind of condition, or anger against people who make this world into the hell or samsara. If we work with our own anger against the unhealthy condition, you know, we create more unhealthy condition. So we need to have a kind of a spirit of enjoying life, I think. I think at least that is what Ryokan is saying. Please.
The way form and emptiness are one.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say breathing is one with its inhaling and its exhaling in the same way?
Yeah. Actually, during this Genzo, I introduced my teacher, Uchiyama Kosho Roshi's poem about life and death. And he said, you know, modern people only know how to inhale and want to gain things, but we don't know how to exhale. That's why we are almost suffocating. So we need to learn how to inhale and how to exhale. And this is about life and death, or birth and death. And birth and death, or life and death, forms one life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not life is good or positive and death is negative. But life and death together forms one life. I think that is a really important point. Please.
Isn't the Dharma play going on all the time, not
mm-hmm.
just in the Zendo,
mm-hmm.
but in the world too,
mm-hmm.
and the words are not Buddhist words, but the words are just the guests anyway, so the
mm-hmm.
Dharma play and the joy and the flow is always
mm-hmm.
happening.
Mm-hmm. I think so. So it's not a question, right? Please.
As your practice has matured from a man of 20 to a man of 60, how have your sleeping dreams changed?
Sleeping dream? When I sleep, really sleep. Well, I think it's kind of interesting. You know, during, you know, for example, during session, I don't usually don't dream. I simply sleep, probably because I'm tired. I have no energy to dream. Or maybe I had enough dream during sitting. I don't need another extra dream. But basically, I don't, you know, remember my dream. You know, some people, you know, describe their dreams in detail, but I cannot believe. I don't remember my dreams in such a details. I remember I dreamed. I had dream, but somehow I don't remember. So I'm not sure. Okay? Any other question?